Hi everyone, welcome back. This is Valeria Lipovetsky and you're listening to Not Alone Podcast. This episode, I'm sitting down with my dear friend Toni Garn, who you might have known but definitely seen. She is truly a supermodel. She's been featured on so many runways, so many covers, been a VS model for a very long time. But the reason why I wanted to sit down with her is not because of her accomplishments as a supermodel, but more of honestly, her heart. I really admire the way she moves in the world and the initiatives that she's part of. She has founded the Toni Garn Foundation, raising money for project advocating for the advancement of girls' access to education in Africa. She also has the Supermodel Flea Market, which is an amazing charity where celebrities donate their clothes and raise money to go to the foundation. I had the pleasure to hang out with Toni, and she is just such a beautiful personality filled with lightness and laughter, not taking herself too seriously. And I really admire that. So I wanted to sit down with her and talk about her journey to philanthropy, talk about what and how she found her purpose. And I've left feeling very inspired to start thinking about the changes that I can make in the world with what I was giving. Before we head into the conversation, please don't forget to leave a rating and review for Not Alone on Apple Podcasts. It helps support us so we can continue doing the show. Let's get to it. Just to give a little bit of background, because I'm sure you told the story 100 million times.
Which one?
How were you discovered as a model?
I was just walking on the street in Hamburg. I'm from Hamburg, Germany, and I was walking on the street. I was literally 13. And I guess I was just taller than my other girlfriends, and there happened to be a model agent. And she was the first modeling agent ever to approach me. And then I signed with her because she was the first. Actually, after that day, I had like people come to me like every month. But then I was actually working at 15. So I just got asked on the street if I want to be a model. Very old school. I literally had no idea what a model does. Like when I saw, I remember when I picked up a Vogue for the first time in that agency's office, then at 14, I went through the, I don't think I've ever actually admitted this. When I went through the ads at the front, I always thought when it said Calvin Klein that that person was Calvin Klein. And it was like a picture of the person with a name underneath it. Like I didn't know ads. My parents are all academics. Like there's no one in fashion in my, I've never looked at a fashion magazine before, literally.
I really got thrown into it.
I learned everything just by doing, by being on set, by being at castings and everything.
It's a very different exposure. Like you come into this world from a very different place when you just kind of get discovered and you kind of accidentally get into the world. Because I'm sure you've met throughout the years girls that are fighting for it. Mm-hmm. You know, like I remember when I started modeling, it was, I mean, I was also 15. And I kind of wanted it, kind of didn't want it, but I was surrounded like in these model apartments, girls that are coming from these small places, small villages, and this is all they have.
Yeah.
So it's a completely different state of mind.
Yeah.
You were kind of like nonchalant about it in a way.
I think I came from a very privileged background. Like I'm sure you could sense that too when there was girls that had another option. Like I got to finish school. I didn't have to, you know, support my family right away. Like I never did. I was always lucky to be able to just keep my own money and they had their own jobs, but they really definitely made sure I finished school. And then there was girls in the modeling apartment that were super happy for me when I would get a certain job because they were also in that way. Then there was other girls that would look at you and be like, oh, and you could tell.
It's a resentment.
Yeah, but I don't want to judge that because they probably have eight people at home they have to feed and they're like waiting for that job. They're dying for this job. They didn't have the chance to even learn English or even go to school and this is the one chance they got. Mm-hmm. So I also understand that they might not be super happy that every time they get turned away from a casting and here's me who walks in and it's very easy for her. Like why, you know what I mean? So but at the beginning when you're 14, 15, you're like, oh, she's not nice. And now I'm like, I get it. I get that must have been tough for her.
You know? I love that you own it because I think that a lot of people feel the need to tell a different story to kind of make them feel like they've worked so hard and earned it, you know, the option.
I did not work to be a model. No, like I definitely go to the gym and watch what I eat. I always have since I'm 14. I'm not going to lie. It's not easy for me to wake up and look great. Like I definitely have to work for it my whole life regarding my body. But I also always took it as a challenge. I'm not going to say, oh, poor me. I'm not always like fasting, but I definitely need to go to the gym. I like working out. I see it like an athlete now. And Victoria's Secret definitely always made it like an athletic thing in a way, because mm-hmm. it was like this one time of the year that you have to work towards something. I enjoyed the trainers, the gyms, the saunas, the food programs. I enjoyed all of that, having like more of a goal.
Yeah.
But other than that, I'm not going to lie, I was booked very easily, very early on. And I think that's why I started so early, to be like, okay, what else am I going to do? Because this is nice, but I'm getting booked. Obviously, I didn't get booked for everything. I often had also months where I was sitting at home twirling my thumbs. Mm-hmm. And that's then when I was like, okay, I got to do more. And that's then how my foundation came about. Because I was like, I mean, I don't really have to think. They won't even let me tie my shoes because then the dress will get wrinkled. Sometimes I can't even dance on set because they're like, please don't move. I'm like, this is literally not it, right? Like, this is fun on the side.
So what like attracted you to stay in that profession?
I think, first of all, I think, I'm not going to lie, it's very well paid. Mm-hmm. So when you start and it's that easy, and then I think every model goes through this phase of, no, I don't want to do this. It's too superficial. Let's do this. Let's do that. And they take a year off or 2 years off. I didn't have to do that. I would have to just go home or talk to people not in the industry to realize we're fucking lucky to be in this position and go there for one day and get paid that amount of money. And the older I got, I was like, I'm in the room with some really not only wealthy people, but really interesting people. How can I use this for other people's advantage? And because I'm fine, but how can I use my position and my, you know, I have to go to these events or I have to go to this job or I have to go to this whatever. And it's so easy. Like, I really don't have a hard time planning. Mm-hmm. Planning. It's mostly to logistics, right? Planning, being organized, being on time, packing the right way and then looking good. And then, but how can I use all of that and then being in the right room with the right places to also do something more meaningful? So I think I've been enjoying fashion in my job way more since I have my foundation, because I know I can use it for other things and other people too, way more. Definitely had, it didn't take me 1 or 2 years to step away and stop mm-hmm. modeling like a lot of other girls. I think it was just like a few weeks of like, ugh, this is another 5-star hotel, whatever.
Yeah. You know?
And then I was like, well, wait, if I do this, I'm going to do this. And I just started connecting brands with my projects in Africa, like really quickly. Mm-hmm. And then it all became so much more fun.
Which I want to learn so much more about your philanthropic journey. But it sounds to me also you kind of never let modeling become your identity in a way. Like you were kind of in it, but still removed enough to be able to see the bigger picture.
Yeah.
So did it ever touch you on like a mental health level, like the whole modeling industry?
I think I'm really, really lucky to say that though. I think I've always kept my background. I've always kept my friends back home. I have definitely very good model friends. I love mm-hmm. my model girlfriends. But the majority of my people that I hang out with, my friends, my people at home, they're all not in this industry. And I love fashion. And I think now it's definitely something that's super interesting to me. I like to play with fashion. I'm about to get to what I'm building right now that is all around fashion, but I've never cared about it that much. I've never been a fashionista that really cares about what she wears. So I've never found those conversations on set super interesting. So I've always talked about other things. So I've always been like, oh my God, you're a doctor, you do this and this. Or like even like the secretary at the front, like, so what are your working hours? Or like on a yacht, I'd be with the staff under the deck and like talking about, where do you guys sleep? This is so cool. Like I've always found that to be more interesting.
I love that.
In a way. And I think that's why it never became my identity, I guess. I don't know.
You like lead with curiosity. Is that something that was instilled in the household from
your
parents?
My mom always said, someone doesn't ask questions, they're boring. And she's so, oh my God, she is so annoying. She can literally bring someone home for lunch and she'll literally ask them, where are you from? But how long? Why are you going to the bathroom again? Have you washed your hands? But how are you feeling? And why are you wearing it like that? And I'm like, oh my God, the poor person. Can they just enjoy the meal with us? But no, she, and if they don't ask us questions or her questions, she's like, she has a hard time liking them. I'm more like, they also might have had a bad hard day, or they just mm-hmm. want to chill, or they just want to enjoy this, or I don't know. But she's like, they don't care at all. Like, I guess that was very early on installed in me.
Asking questions.
Very curious family.
I think that's so powerful. I actually recognize in myself that that's something that I need to focus on these days, to develop it a little bit more. I think it was always something in me, but I've kind of become so immersed in my own little bubble, in my own little world.
You have a big family, though.
Maybe the brain capacity.
The brain capacity. Right now, if I met up with, honestly, like if my friend brought 3 random friends that I wasn't supposed to have lunch with, I don't know if I'd have the energy to ask all of them what they're doing. Like, I just have an energy for my one friend. We have 1 hour. I have to go back home to our babies. We have our job. But then there is definitely this anxiety or little bit of guilt in me that feels like, I'm sorry I didn't get to talk to you guys today. Maybe another time. Like, yeah. I would definitely feel the need to say that.
Yeah.
But I know right now, since I have my baby, for sure, my capacity is like limited, like reached like full.
It's so hard. And I don't think
you do it
people,
with three.
Yeah. I mean, it's a lot. And hence why I feel like I've been canceling all these events that's been part of my work. Cause I'm just like, I really don't feel like having mindless small talks, and not because of the other person, because of me, because I just really cannot.
What's the point of small talks if you can actually listen and then digest
it?
You're like, I can fake it. I can stand there. I can definitely be like, but then it doesn't help that person or me if I'm going to go home and just be like, ugh, serious face. And then be like, that was a waste of my time. And the more I introduce people to my daughter, the more they text me after, enjoy every second of it. And I'm like, you're right. Like, it's like the best thing they could text me after, because it's like, they all have older kids or whatever. Yeah. It's like, just really treasure that. And I'm trying, but it's so hard when you have so much also that you love in life, which both of us also love working, right? So that's, it's truly also who I am. My identity is definitely working and getting stuff done. And I am a girl's girl. I love to have all my people I work with are women somehow. Love to work and get stuff done and create change. So it's tough balancing. I think the juggle of private and work is like going to be forever.
I feel like watching my mother raise me as a single mom has been one of the most powerful experiences in my life, because I've seen her looking amazing, having a huge circle of friends, having people over, traveling. And it was so interesting for me to watch her just like move in the world, because that inspired a lot of the ways I approach
life. You know,
life.
It's possible.
Yeah. And, you know, I had like a conversation with her a few years back. I had this job opportunity and I had to travel and be there for a few weeks, which was obviously huge. I already had Jake and Ben. And I just remember talking to her about it, and she was super against it. And she was like, you can't, it's, you won't be able to live with it, because it's very hard for me to live with the fact that I used to leave you alone a lot because I was traveling and doing things for work. And I was sitting there listening to her and seeing like she's in, you know, has so much agony about it. And I had to like remind her that
like, no, I'm fine.
Not only that I'm fine, that I'm like, this is actually the choices you made really affected me in the most positive way, because you showed me all the things that were possible.
That must have been such an emotional conversation. I'm about to cry. Was she so happy? Was she so relieved?
She was so happy, because it's funny because you're like, we don't really have those conversations.
I don't have time to talk to my mom about deep stuff.
And I had to just, I feel like it was a big aha moment for her, because I think she was carrying it for a long time. And I just told her, I'm like, at the end of the day, you were there in the moments that I needed you. And that's what we remember.
God, I hope I have that conversation with my daughter in 20 years. Because right now there's definitely a lot of guilt of like, I bring her everywhere. I try to, but now she's in kindergarten and loves kindergarten. So it's like, what's more important, mommy or her friends? Mommy or her friends? Like, is the structure more important or does she need me? And I always try to think how many days, you know? But she's definitely getting to the age. She's almost three. She just wants her routine, her toys and her friends and her sand and her water and her buckets. Like, she doesn't care about, you know? Another cool restaurant or plane or hotel, like like the fanciest hotel. She's like,
She wants to be a kid, right? She wants to be surrounded in her own, with her own environment. No, it's very inspiring to see what you are doing, and I don't think it will ever get easy, no matter how many people will tell you. Like, even the story I'm sharing with you, I hope that it's going to be in the back of your head.
Also, how many people help you, right? Because it's like, I want time with her. She wants mommy. So it's like, it doesn't matter how many people help. Like, sometimes now with my nanny, I'm like, do you mind if you just help me clean the house today? Because I want to actually spend time with her. And she's like, don't worry about it. Because I'm like, that's not your job. You should be playing with her. But today I want to be playing with her.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes I'm like, this is just all I need from you right now. And she's like, don't worry about it. But I feel like I have to be brave enough sometimes to ask for those things. Like, I need I need everyone's help. And sometimes it is just for my best friend to help me reorganize my closet, because today I don't have time to talk to her, but I need to do this for work. And then I have time for Luca. So it's just like micromanaging my life. And
welcome.
Welcome to motherhood.
Womanhood in general.
Oh, gosh.
Ladies, I cannot wait to talk to you about today's sponsor, NYX. I started using traditional pads and tampons since the age of 14, 13, it's been a while. And at some point in my late 20s, I was craving to find an alternative that will feel more comfortable, that will feel more hygienic, that'll be better for my body and for the environment. So reusable was also something I wanted to find. And let me tell you, it was very hard. There wasn't a lot of options out there, and I really had to get into the Crunchy Mama's blogs to find a suggestion. But then I found NYX, an intimate apparel company that is reinventing products for real life. Now, I know what you think when you hear reusable period products. It's very intimidating and honestly feels a bit messy. But let me tell you, I've converted so many of my friends and colleagues to it. It is so much more comfortable, practical, and it can be worn and washed and not tossed. Once I became a fan of the product, I also became a fan of the company and its DNA and its mission. And I had an opportunity to sit down and speak with their founder, Joanne, about building the fastest growing intimate brand globally and truly being a pioneer of the leak-proof underwear marketplace. Their leak-proof element absorbs about 1 to 17 teaspoons of liquids across a variety of their products, from the leak-proof underwear to the activewear and more. I've been using the products for so long that I truly got to test all the things. They are perfect for everyday wear. If you have any light bladder leaks, sweat, discharge, and supports you from your lightest to the heaviest period days. It looks and feels just like regular underwear, but better. Also so easy to clean. You just pop it in the washing machine and you're good to go. And it comes in a range of sizes and styles. Sizing goes from extra small to 4XL. I always suggest to try my favorite styles, which is the leak-proof ultra-thin no-show bikini or the ultra-thin no-show thong. Millions of people have been using it and switched to it. I am one of them. So if you are thinking about trying it out, I have a special offer just for you. Right now, you can get 10% off your first order. You just need to go to NYX.com and use promo code Valeria10 at checkout. That's KNIX.com, promo code Valeria10 for 10% off your first order. You were part of the runway shows, which is like a huge thing. I hope they bring it back, by the way. Like,
I loved it. I have nothing bad to say about those years.
Yeah, but in terms of the training, you mentioned that it was like a whole program.
It's a whole program. And my number one thing that I needed to look good was to not travel, which is obviously impossible. Right. But my body really doesn't resonate well with traveling, which is so ironic because given it's my life. But I mean, you know, the unbalanced meals that you can have and the water retention. I'm a big lymphatic drainage massage person. So at some point now I have my masseuses in all my cities where I needed them. But mm-hmm. I would kind of be like, guys, before VS, I need to be in New York at least 1 month before the show. But the casting is like 2 months before the show, so that you have to look exactly the same way for the casting already. So it's kind of a 3 month thing. But again, I have such good girls around me. One of them, she never really did Victoria's Secret, but she's obsessed with herself looking good, me looking good. And she'd be like, baby, tomorrow morning at 7 a.m. Barry's. I'm like, no, okay. She goes, I'm not even doing the show. I'm making you do it because we're doing this together. And then, of course, I had like one ticket and I let her watch the show because she was literally like my private trainer.
Oh,
and
that's so
she'd
nice.
Be like, baby, no, you're not having this with this. You're having this with this. So I just have like people around me that would always help me. And then I would also know what I needed. So I would always go to the spa called Sha, which is incredible, which is not about fasting or juicing or anything extreme. It's very healthy. It's macrobiotic. So they give you like 5-6 meals. Actually, no, 4 or 5 meals a day. Smaller portions, of course, but super healthy. No sugar, barely any gluten, but they do serve everything. They're really based. Macrobiotic diet is very much based on grains. Mm-hmm. So you don't cut carbs, but it's like brown rice and barley and like the healthy grains. And then less sugar being fruit and then less fish, but they do also serve fish. So I'm a big fan of, and I learned that very early on. I went there at 17 for the first time. I'm a big fan of how can we do everything healthy? Because when you do it, and you work out enough, your body needs healthy food. And actually, when I'm the most healthy, when I work out the hardest, I enjoy food the most. I mean, you know how it is. Yeah. When you're hungrier, then you want to eat healthier. Mm-hmm. When you travel a lot, all you want is crap food and another drink at night and 15 coffees in the morning. You know, so it really for me is like being in one place, not being jet lagged is a big one. Because the jet lag would be like, oh God, now I need to sleep. Now I need to.
Oh my God, that's really.
So that would be my main thing. But I really enjoyed the structure. I think because I was taken out of such a structure so early on. So I started working at 14, somehow finished high school at 18. So I went back and forth between 14 and 18 almost every weekend between Germany and New York.
Wow.
So I didn't have that routine. So I think Victoria's Secret kind of also gave me a structure of gym in the morning, then this, then maybe a massage in the afternoon. And it was definitely tough, but if you do it properly and healthy with the right support, it can be very fun because I'm always someone who likes structure and who likes to feel like they have a real job. Like,
yeah.
Yeah.
Like a goal to get to. I really love, like, I think now I appreciate it way more, understanding all the hard work and dedication that goes into it. Mm-hmm. Like VS models, like angels, were basically athletes.
Yeah.
You guys were in a training mm-hmm. zone and there was, you know, the
but
Olympics
what I also loved
was...
about it is there were certain gyms that would let us train for free and we would all meet up there and it was so... such teamwork. Because, you know, there's always these offices that do like these team workouts together to like build group team building, whatever. I never felt this at Victoria's Secret ever. It was always they would, and the trainers helped with that because we did all these workouts together, like carrying the thing together or doing sit-ups and then clapping in the middle. And it was like this all the time. It was like, are you going to see that masseuse later? No, I'll see you there. Girls, I brought 15 matchas. Who wants one? Like it was very group vibes because right. we were all in New York before. So I really enjoyed the time. I really got to know all the girls really well and everyone really claps backstage and enjoys when the other person looks incredible. It's such a
I feel like it's very
support.
Empowering. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, that's beautiful. We started modeling at 15. You had, I think you went on the runway at 15. Was that your first runway?
Victoria's Secret? No.
No, not Victoria's Secret
Calvin.
In general.
I started with a Calvin exclusive and I did Calvin for 2 years, only Calvin, 15 and 16.
Wow.
Yeah, which was great for school because I had a contract. I could only do Calvin. So clients were like, oh, she's got the exclusivity. Whereas I'm like, I don't want to work anymore because I only have those that 1 month to work because I want to finish school.
Yeah.
So it was really good for me.
So all of this brought you to a point where you had a chance to be in rooms with smart, successful people. You had the ability and knew how to recognize what questions to ask and how to, mm-hmm. you know, kind of look at, okay, what's next for you? Mm-hmm. And when did you decide to venture out and get into philanthropy?
It was definitely not a conscious decision. It wasn't like, oh, I want more. Let me.
Another not conscious decision, Tony. When is
no, going? No. I've never been someone who
plans. I
feel
like life is just like
happening. Here. No, it wasn't a conscious decision. It's a love for Africa. It really is love for a place. Like if you travel to a place so much that you absolutely love, that truly deep in my core, I don't think I would be living in Europe if I wasn't in the fashion industry. I would be living somewhere very different, probably in Africa.
What was your first exposure to Africa?
I don't know. South Africa as a kid for vacation, Morocco for
okay.
a few
so
jobs, Cape Town.
As a kid.
Not a lot, a lot. I would love to say my grandma lived there or I was raised there or something. I don't have that. I don't know. It must be a previous life. But I just have a deep connection to the energy. Mm-hmm. It's the ground. It's the food. It's the music. It's mostly the people. And when you love a place so much, and I felt that in almost every country that I visited, of course, others more than others, depending on the culture or even the religion or certain aspects or language. Obviously, in French-speaking language countries, it's harder to connect with the women as in English-speaking countries. When you have such love for a place and then you learn about it, and obviously by love for a place and getting to know the place, I don't mean just luxury safaris. I mean to actually go in to the little towns and villages. And then I wanted to go with bigger NGOs. I was like, I'm not getting to know this place by staying in a nice hotel. So I went with organizations, but they don't just take you as a tourist. So I immediately committed some donations through fashion brands. So immediately I was like, let's do this. And then they can donate 100,000. I won't take a cut. They don't take a cut, but they donate the money and I'll do jobs for you for free and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
So then we started creating these programs around building schools and educating women. And the more I did that, the more you learn from the people on the ground, the bigger organizations. I wanted to have my own small organization, but I'll get to that in a second. But I'm not going to say the big organizations are crap. They're also very necessary because they have really good people on the ground. There's so many locals that are attached to them, so many volunteers. And those are the people that I learned the most from. Those are the people that are from the villages. And they tell us this is our biggest issue here. This is why the girls can't come to school. Or this is genital mutilation is still a thing here because thousands of years ago, this was da-da-da-da-da. Now, slowly, the women are understanding contraceptives or we're starting to build more wells because da-da-da-da-da. But that's how I learned the most, but it also sparked, like you said before, so much more curiosity again of like, this is how it is. So wait, if we build a school here, the girls have a safe place to live. They don't have to walk 4 hours a day to get there. The families are all for it. That's all they want is for their daughters to be able to read and write. And there's even like ongoing jobs in the town because they need certain jobs. Wait, so the school would change so much? And then I was like, why don't we do this? So when you have those moments, it's impossible not to do it. So that's how it all started. It really was me loving to go there. I still now, I do so much fundraising. The best part of all this is going. I get to go again in 3 weeks, thank God. Didn't have much time this year. But normally I go to all my projects every year and it's the best part of everything I do. So it wasn't like I want to do more. It was more like...
It was more like... A little exposure, curiosity, more exposure.
No, when a human being is in love with a place or finds huge empathy for a certain place or a certain culture or certain people, I think it's only weird to be like, but I'm too busy. Like, of course you're going to invest more time.
You know what? So the reason why I wanted to ask you how it came about, because I remember when I was with a very big agency in New York, I signed with them and I was with them for a few months and they called me and they said, okay, Valeria, we need you to tie yourself to a foundation organization. It was kind of like very...
It's become a thing now.
Yeah, but that was a long time ago and it felt so mechanical and I'm just like, what? I don't know enough to tie myself. I don't want to just be like, well, I'm fundraising. So there is a bit of that kind of fakeness.
I think there's this thing with, what's it called? The pageants of like pretty girls have to just do good or something. So they thought, what's the thing of models? What can we make them, give them a deeper voice to give the age or the people to book them? I mean, you do a million other things. You have your own voice. But a bunch of girls, they don't know what else to do. They never went to school or they don't haven't found the meaning in life or whatever. So it's super easy to just say, I'm supporting this cause. Mm-hmm. So I guess that's what they thought. And yeah, I mean, I do so much. I'm like so busy with my projects. We speak to our partners on the ground like every day. So I don't even think about... Oh my God, people could think this is fake or whatever. But I know that there's that out there.
You can tell.
I know there's that out there
that
people. Yeah. But I also always say, yes, it would be a shame if a certain person gets $1 million job because the client believes that they care about elephants. And then the girl that actually cares about elephants and is in the field and literally supporting elephants doesn't get that job. That would suck. But in general, I don't really care if the person isn't 1,000% behind it. If one of her followers donates, if one of her followers then cares more or learns about this and then donates, because everyone's like, that sucks. That person is just faking it. I'm like, listen,
it's better than
talking about nothing.
Yeah, exactly.
Things need to be shared. Things need to be spread. Not everyone has the time and the energy like me that really puts it into Africa. That's my choice. Mm-hmm. Other people have other interests. What I'm trying to put out there is, trust me that your donation will reach the project very directly because I go and I care. Let me do the job for you. You can donate to my organization if you care about women's rights. So I'm trying to like make it easier for people. I also really love when people come to me and say, listen, I would love to do something like that. I don't have time right now for X, Y, and Z reasons. That's totally legitimate.
Yeah.
Can I just donate a little bit? I'm like, great, thank you. I'll make sure it gets there.
Of course.
Not everyone should start
help.
Their own nonprofit now, you know?
Yeah, it's a huge thing.
Yeah.
But let me break down your projects. Like what are aspects of your foundation?
So right now we're in Burundi, Ghana, and Uganda. Mm-hmm. We've worked in Zimbabwe, Rwanda, Burkina Faso, a lot of different places. But right now that's where we're active, those three countries. And it's all around medical and educational facilities because we've found that those create the most impact. That is really when the numbers go from like only 20% of the girls graduated school or had 4 children, all of a sudden only have 2 children, or, you know, that then actually can graduate. So that's where we see the most impact. I didn't come up with this. This is like... Women in sub-Saharan Africa have a bigger impact in life and make more money on the back end or have a safer upbringing if you invest in education. Mm-hmm. So what we do is again, we don't do anything on the ground. It's all the partners. It's all the locals. They come up with the ideas. They're the most incredible community leaders, essentially. We find those people who the community loves and trusts and have a little bit of a setup already. I wouldn't just like send someone money where I'm like, oh God, I trust right. him. The people love him. It's normally already a school. It's normally already an ongoing project, oftentimes with a little medical room or something. But they're like, listen, we have like 30 people lined out of our house in the morning when we come here. Could you help us build an extra little medical house? Or we definitely desperately need a kindergarten because unfortunately a lot of our 17, 18-year-old girls that are about to graduate have already 2 or 3-year-old babies and they have to leave them 10 hours away with their wow. aunts and uncles. So then it's really specific to the need
of the
project. The
requests that come in.
It's super grassroots. Mm-hmm. We can donate within like a day now that we trust our project and we have set up really good partnerships with them. It's a really easy, quick donation process. For us to start a new project is quite, lengthy. We mm-hmm. always go first. I would never take on a project or donate any one of my donors' money without having visited it and understand what's going on here. I always say all children in the world deserve a nice future and deserve to be educated and deserve a warm meal. But unfortunately, it's not sustainable if it's not led by the right people. So mm-hmm. that's who we're checking. I'm not going to go and play with the kids and understand how cute are you. It's about who are the people managing this? Where does the money actually go? How do you plan on doing this? How do you plan on doing the ongoing fees, though? Are you supported by the government? How many buildings do you really need? Like, it's really specific to the place. Yeah, we also always try to go in with kind of a completely separate donor, like a company that has nothing to do with philanthropy but speaks the language, is from there just to be like our driver or our translator, have a completely different eye on it, because obviously Africa is full of thousands of indigenous languages. Mm-hmm. They speak French or Spanish or English mostly, but we just to really understand the core of the things, we bring also other people to be like, oh, that's actually not the problem here. They didn't tell you this and this and this and this, because could be something as little as they have a new insect problem in the agriculture farm. That's why they can't sustain themselves. That's why their fees are so high, but they haven't figured out the farm issue. So I think you should ask about the farming. Don't talk so much about the school. It could be right. something as simple as that, that we're like, oh, they didn't tell us this because they thought people are coming to build a school. Let's talk to them about school. So it can be something, it's very complex, very different to every project, but it really comes down to who are the people leading the project. Are they also committed to staying there? Because like in a lot of poor countries, once they become successful, some people then want to go to the bigger country or the more successful country. Mm-hmm. Fair enough. The kids should, you know, once they're educated and they have the best grade in their class, try to go to Accra or Cape Town or you know, Kampala. But ideally, you want to stay in your town and support your village, because that's then when the Western world doesn't have to keep supporting the Southern world.
Well, I feel like with these nonprofit and foundation, and you know, you mentioned yourself, it's like a trend now, and it's a wonderful trend. And again, to your point, it doesn't matter if your whole heart is not in it, or you can't be as active as you want to be. Any help is great help. But I have to say, for me, I have this very skeptic approach to a lot of these organizations, these nonprofits, because there is no transparency. Mm-hmm. And you can make anything up these days and put a link and a GoFundMe. And, you know, we unfortunately learn more and more about these foundations that just take money and then disappear. How do you recommend for people that want to get involved or want to donate? Like, how do they even... Where did they go? Like, simple step. Is there a website? Is there a...
I guess. I mean, there is. We also have to go through a vetting process. We're also supported by the German government, for example. For the German government to give tax dollars, euros, to my foundation, it's a German foundation, we were vetted, like, a lot. Like, there's all these verifications that you can get. But a lot of them also we've looked at, and it's like, oh, it would cost you like 50 grand in the process and da-da-da-da-da. And we're like, do we actually need it? I think between you and I, we know enough people that actually do work on the ground. Trust the person who you know. Like, I would hope that people that know me know she actually really checks, or she also has a really good team. She hired the right people. I trust her friend. And then I hope the friends would say, we trust my friend because she knows someone. Like, I think it's at this point word of mouth of like, I know this person that knows this person. Or we've all met incredible people that do ocean conservation or wildlife preservation, or people that really care about a certain cancer research or whatever. But if you really know the person that's in the lab or on the ground or doing it. I think that's the way to start.
I think there is, like, where I see the future is, I think bringing in a voice or a public figure that stands for something, that has their own voice and connect themselves with a foundation legitimizes the cause.
That's why I have to be a little careful now where I go, to be honest, because I'm such a people's person and I want to support everything. When my friends invite me, I'm like, okay, I'll go if it works out. And now sometimes slowly I'm like, okay, wait, but people really know what I'm doing in Africa. Let me check what they're doing. Hold on one second. I want to go and I want to support your cocktail, but can I just understand, what are your fees? Like, normally, how much do you actually make and how much actually goes there? Because if the event costs you 10 million, it's great that you're raising 11, but did you really have to spend 10 on the event? Because the people are plotting for 11 million raised, but 1 million on the ground doesn't make as much as 11. Like, can you just, you know what I mean? Like, I hustle my ass off for every event to make sure that the caterer, the DJ, the everything, everyone, I know I owe them one then, but I'm like, please do this for the kids. Like, can we just all agree? And normally our overhead is close to zero. Like, I'm really trying to get everyone involved. I feel like I owe so many people favors, but I'm like, please do it for them. Like, you DJ very short at a, of course, that's when sponsors come in. I'm trying now to get sponsors because I'm like, let me try and really use my name, or that's what Instagram is great, right? I'm like, please let me tag you, let me support your company because what you guys do is great, but then we can pay everyone. Like, hair, makeup, and DJ should be paid, you know? So we're getting there where I want to legitimize everything.
I know you touched on it, but your foundation and donations are focused on women, on girls. Why was that something you knew from the beginning you want to support?
Yes, my mom was quite, she was like at 14 years old, she's like, you're making money already, you should support another girl. Like, you're a young girl that's making a lot of money, you should support. And you know, you get those leaflets coming to your house that are like, you want to sponsor a child. I started with one, like 25 bucks a month or something. Now I have like four with this one organization. I actually got to visit one of them in Burkina Faso, actually two of them, Zimbabwe and Burkina. I have kids, they're like 16
how
now.
Was it?
It was amazing. It was amazing.
And they knew.
They actually were wearing the gifts that I got them. So I want to always tell everyone, normally with sponsored children, depends on the organization, but I have them with Plan, and Plan is really great with sponsored children. They're actually big in Canada and in
Plan,
they're called P-L-A-N. They're really big on sponsored children. Yes, if you donate 25 bucks a month, it doesn't, the kid doesn't become 25, get 25 bucks, as it shouldn't be. They, the whole village together is sponsored by a certain country, and then like the 5,000 sponsored children together, that money then creates a new school or a new well. But the gifts that you can sign up for, the kid actually gets. And you never really understand, does that actually happen? But when I arrived in the middle of nowhere, 7 hours into like the mountains of Zimbabwe, my little Nomtamdazo, who was seven, was wearing the little butterfly wings that I had crossed half a year before. It takes some administration to get there. But she was actually wearing them, and that made her so happy that she had a sponsor somewhere in a different planet who looked out for a gift for her, and she got that gift. And they don't have material things there, which also makes them very happy, right? They don't need material things. But for children to have one gift, we just did this fundraiser in Uganda last week for Christmas, and I felt we were talking about materialism because we're all like, we don't need anything, and they truly don't need much. I mean, the people that we're supporting, knock on wood, have a lot. They have their, we're not really supporting orphans right now because that's a different, whole different league of support, because it has to be very, very tracked, and the people supporting the orphans need to be, it's a different thing. But we're supporting families right now where the children only with education can really thrive and really get a job. So it's not a place where there's issues with drugs or weapons, or we don't support war zones right now. We're trying to really work in areas where education can take them to like go really far. So one little gift for kids that have never had Christmas or birthday before, like, it's really special because you always get these catalogs that said, you want to send a gift? So I can only encourage people actually do that. It really does reach them.
Well, I feel like back in the day it was so removed because, you get these flyers, you get these pamphlets, but you don't really have that connection, right? And now I do have to say something that's so remarkable about social media is the ability to see the people that you are helping and to see their, you know, living conditions. There's this one guy that I started following where it's also in Africa, and I'm sorry, I don't remember the town, but he goes and asks people, how much do you pay for your rent? And he shows the conditions they live in. And it's Insane.
Wow. Send me that account.
I'm going to send it to you. It's absolutely mind-blowing to see. It obviously gives you a different perspective about our own privileged life here.
Yep.
But also, you know, the ability to see that, and then he raises money, people send him money to give to the person, and then he follows up to show, you know,
that's amazing.
Relocated him to like a better place.
Wow, that's amazing.
And it's all mostly women, children, right? And so those are such powerful stories out there.
That's when social media is great. Because I definitely have days where I'm like, this is so exhausting. This is so much pressure. I have to post.
Yeah.
But the majority of the time, I do really, I'm really grateful for social media.
What are some of the lessons you've learned from your philanthropy, like changing?
Generally in my life, obviously live in the moment and be grateful. Like I don't know if I've never had depression because of my charity, but maybe. Like I don't know. I've never had a really down day where I'm like, what is the point of life? I never have been like that because I'm like, obviously, we're all here together to have experiences and live together and have the best time possible. And there's people that don't even, like when I feel sick, I can't even walk. I can't even smile. I can't look after my child. I feel like absolute crap. So for people to not be, have meals or a safe roof over their head or have to be scared to get raped on their way to school, like that's a must. Like the people have to feel safe in life. They have to be able to eat. They have the right to education. It's a human right to education. That's like a law. Everyone has the right to be educated and to eat and to know that back in the day it was the privileged world's fault that there's people that are suffering. I mean, now global warming is adding to that as well, but it's the must of the people that have a warm house and a roof over their head to support the others. It's like so natural. So I guess it's hard for me sometimes to go on a really fancy trip. That sometimes is like, it's okay, I've worked for this, let me just enjoy this week.
How does that duality works?
I've learned to accept it. Because I also know that my energy and my platform and the people that I surround myself with that also help me with fundraising a lot and the energy to just be healthy. Like sometimes I just need to look at the ocean. Sometimes I just need also a quiet piece of so I just tell myself it's okay. It's okay to have the 360. And I was also in a way raised in this world. I've been modeling longer than I haven't been modeling. So there's also a way that it's become my life, right?
Okay, so lesson. So obviously, you were mentioning you feel like you haven't had any mental health issues and you think it's contributed because of your service, which actually there have been studies done about happiness and about longevity. And one of the biggest pillars is
getting back
being of service to other people, right? And I think, I mean, it feels like this is your life's mission in a way. So you're going to live until you're 300 years old. I hope you're ready.
If I move to Greece, I heard the oldest people in the world live in Greece.
And Greece, like, Sardinia, there's a few different places.
I'm definitely moving to the ocean, by the way. I said it right now on a camera. I need to do it.
Good. Okay. You put
a
pin on it.
I get why you guys
live
here.
So anything else that you carry in like mentally from all these experiences?
I mean, I feel like it's in a way who I am. I don't even like to say charity. I just like to go to Africa. I like my projects, the people that I work with there, not even just help, but the people that I work with there. There are schools that I would visit without a phone, without a camera, obviously. Like they're part of my friends. Like it's they're part of my gang. Like it's part of who I am. I just realized at some point I have a lot of followers and a lot of brands and I'm starting to also care. And I am in the world where fashion, there's a lot of luxury in our world. So it'd be stupid not to connect the two. And then I was like, boom, a whole nother job. But it's like...
I mean, which brings me to Super Flea Market.
I have to talk about Super Flea Market because I'm a proud business owner as of a few months ago.
Woohoo!
Yes. So not always. Since 2016, I had my foundation, right? Which is a complete nonprofit.
What's the name of the foundation?
Tony Garn Foundation. Very simple. I didn't think about a name. My mom did it for me. She used to run my accounting. I did the fundraising. She did the accounting. And now we're more people. But that's how it started. I've always been doing flea markets. I don't know if you know this, but I've done this for like 10 years now, selling my clothes and a bunch of other models' clothes. I've had great supporters. Christy Turlington, Giselle Bündchen, Carly Claus, Kate Moss have donated clothes. And we've raised quite a lot of money. We've had huge success. And then last year, I had kind of a new team of two really cool girls in Berlin who are now my co-founders. And they were like, why do you always sell your old stuff on like a secondhand platform and then just donate the $800? You know that one dress that, I don't know, Christy Turlington wore, if you put it up for auction, it's a really famous dress. You could make so much more money and then you could also give it to her organization. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh my God, like an online secondhand business? No way, I'm too busy. It took me like half an hour. And then I was like, that's a fucking genius idea. Let's do it. And then I was like, okay, well, you need to be my co-founder. It's like, I'm not going to start a business
myself. Take care
myself.
Of the tech. Take care of all the operations.
So now we're three girls and we founded the beginning of the year. And I'm also in Miami because we wanted to tell people we're going online. We're going live. So we had like a little private friends and family launch. And the difference is selling celebrities' clothes, but also going to their organizations. So we're starting with my foundation, All Hands and Hearts, which is Petra Nemkova's organization. You may have heard of it. They do disaster relief, which is really important. And then Rewild, which does looking after the oceans and our planet. So we have those three organizations that the donors, the celebrities can then choose. That's, I want to pick that organization. I want my donations to go there. We might switch it around, but for now we'll launch with those three because I want everyone to sell their stuff on my platform, obviously, and people have different initiatives that they care about. But also, I think there should be different organizations. Sometimes I'm like, oh, I wish I could just, you know, my projects are good right now. I mean, I barely ever feel like that. There's always a need list, like huge. But sometimes I'm like, I just did this fundraiser. Can I just allocate those 20 grand to that tsunami in Hawaii or that da-da-da-da-da? And with this, I'll have a platform where I feel like I'm looking after more things. And it's a necessity. I'm in the second biggest polluting industry in the world. I'm still working for certain brands that are not super sustainable. I'm not going to lie. It's still my job, right? But I wanted to create something that I was inevitably doing already, but not online.
I'm so excited to send you so much stuff.
We already have a few items of yours. I don't know if you know this, but she already sent us some things.
I know. Of course I know. I'm very excited. I think that would be
remarkable. So you get to pick which organization you want to support. And I can promise you, and this is why I also felt like it was my need, my job to do this, because the CEO of the Tony Garn Foundation, Coralie, my CEO, who I love and adore, and she goes to all the projects with me, is also the head of the impact of the Super Flea Market. So it's her job to really vet these organizations. We're not just going to take on a random huge NGO and say donate there. We're going to make sure they work as grassroots as a Tony Garn Foundation.
So the Tony Garn Foundation, how many people do you have? I'm kind of interested in the whole aspect of the, you know, the company, the business of it.
Well, the Tony Garn Foundation is not a business. That's a nonprofit, but this is a business.
Yeah, but I mean operations.
Yeah, so Tony Garn Foundation, I have one CEO and we just hired one person who wants to spend her time between Africa and Europe, which is great. So I have my first like local hire and then we have one intern. So it's just four of us. Mm-hmm. And Super Flea Market, it's Charlotte who does our marketing, tech, website, everything. And Coralie as well, who's the CEO of Tony Garn Foundation. She runs the impact side. So it's the three of us. We're three founders. But then also we have my stylist, who's been my stylist forever. Her name is Omar Sana and she's going to head brand relationships, communications, because obviously one day, not right now, that's not our focus right now, but I'd love to give brands also a platform to upcycle their things because they have so much.
So
she's going to be a part of that. So right now we feel like we're a team of like four girls. Somehow I never hire a man. I don't know why. Maybe one day.
One day. Okay, you're very, very busy.
I know. That's why I said at the beginning, I really need to...
Let's talk a little bit about Tony outside of her fashion role and her philanthropy role.
I'm just at home with my baby in sweats. That's all I do.
Where are you at? Like just on your journey?
I'm exhausted. No, really.
Destination exhausted.
I'm exhausted. I'm also going through a divorce, which is a lot of work.
Yeah.
So I'm like 1 hour a day I give to lawyers for certain things. And then I work for certain hours. And in Berlin, I have a really nice routine. I have my office for the foundation where I'm spending a lot of time on the flea market right now. I try to go to the gym. First, I drop her off at the kindergarten. Then I like to go to the gym. Then I have like 4 or 5 hours of meetings. And then I pick her up from the kindergarten. And then I really try to just put my phone down. Maybe I message one or two other moms to meet up on a playground. But I normally really just spend it with Luca. And I love that time so much. I mean, I'm still exhausted at like 8 p.m. And I'm like, okay, let's go to bed now. And then I work again normally from like 8 to 10. And then I just pass out. That's my routine at home. And I really enjoy it. And somehow it's very, even though it's very busy that day, it feels because we're so used to traveling and doing so much more. The fashion weeks and the traveling now with the baby or without the baby are way more exhausting than my routine in Berlin. To have a routine and to not be jet lagged and to have, it's helped me so much. It's given me so much peace.
How old are you now?
I'm 31.
Have you gone through your Saturn return?
What is that?
Girl.
What is that?
The way I'm dropping that thing term on literally every single person.
Is that
I
a
meet?
Miami thing I need to know about?
No,
I have
not
no
at
time
all.
For astrology, if that's what it is.
Absolutely not.
I'm still looking for the right therapist, by the way, if you have one.
You know what? I think that I need to start looking for a therapist too.
I've tried like 10.
You did?
I've tried so many. No, I had therapy with one therapist who I really love, but she's in LA. Time difference does not work anymore.
Oh, that's hard.
I had a few, but then sometimes they're like, oh, talking about the same thing. Or I had one that was in German. I cannot open up in German. I don't know why. I was raised in German, but I've never had a German relationship. So I'm like, I don't. And normally I only talk about men. But I'm like, I can't. Open up in German. I don't know why.
No, I mean, you know that's like a fact thing with languages.
What about you? And what language would you like to do therapy?
I think I can express myself and be the most open probably in English. I feel like
that's what you speak to with your man, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I feel like I often, because we have no time, take like the sentence that she gave me and I'm like repeating it to him. And I'm like, that was very handy. If this was in German, I would have to be like, how do I say it to him properly in this language? So it's easy.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Then, yeah.
But it depends on the language you speak. Like it, different languages bring out different aspects of
your
personality.
100%. I'm a different person in German.
Like when I'm angry, I have to be angry in Hebrew.
Really?
Because then I'm able to really like let the emotion
through.
I kind of
want to hear like angry.
I don't know if
right
you want to. I'll send you a voice note one time if you get like
love.
A screaming cursive.
I would love.
It'll be like Valeria is going through it.
I would love.
Okay, Saturn return. Okay. Saturn return happens approximately every 29 and a half years, which means, so it's the duration of Saturn orbit around the sun, which means it lands on the same place in the sky as it did when you were born.
Okay, so for every person, it's at 29 and a half.
Something like that. But what it means, like kind of energetically.
Pretty much divorced exactly then, so.
This is what I'm saying. So it's kind of in a way a time where you're just like, who am I? What am I doing? Where's this going? Like, you know, you start really questioning the core and trying to really peel all these layers to try to.
I don't know if it was Saturn return or just the fact that my marriage wasn't working out and I had a baby. So those are like huge things in life that would cause a person to change anyway.
Mm.
No offense, astrology, that might be true too. But for me, it was those facts. But maybe Saturn return caused me to feel that. I don't know. I need to get more into astrology thing. But the baby definitely has a huge impact.
Oh my God, of course.
On everyone's life. For me, that was like, what am I doing with my life? Where do I want to go? Where is my focus? Who do I want to be for her?
Yeah.
What person do I want to show her?
I mean, I went through my Saturn return from 28 until like 32.
It's a long one. So
it was a solid. It was a solid ride.
Might be in it. And was it all like exhausting,
just,
emotional? Like what
exactly.
was the number
it's
one?
It's exhausting. It's confusing. You're just kind of like you're not like rooted.
Mm.
But it was it is a very empowering journey if you kind of surrender to it in a way. If you let yourself.
Do you think I need to do less and sit on a beach more often to understand what's happening? Therapist Valeria.
I mean, well, if you ask my professional opinion.
I don't need a therapist. I'll just come here every month. That's great.
Welcome to the Not Alone practice. You're not alone. You know what? I do think that right now you're doing exactly what you need to do in order to get through the, you know, your current kind of season. I think that it's a great survival skill and it will get through it. I think you'll know when it's time for you to slow down. I think it's so inspiring to see you find a source of inspiration, of a fulfillment through acts of service. I think that that's something that I've been thinking a lot about recently. I think that for me, a lot of my excuses are I don't really want to get myself into a foundation or project where I can't really give my 100% to.
It's
not an excuse.
It's 100% valid. And just as your friend, I would recommend you, if you really feel the longing to do that, look at your 2-3 friends that you trust the most. Where are they helping? What are they doing? And then either just donate there or plan a trip with your family there. Like really go there. Because once you feel it, once you're actually there, no matter what it is, you're going to have the best time and you're going to feel so full. Your kids are going to understand what's happening. I don't know where you're going to go, if your kids can go or not, but you're gonna not have, it's not gonna feel like it work. It's not gonna feel like a job. It's not gonna feel like I have to donate to this or they're asking for more money. You're gonna be inspired to do more. You're gonna create your own ideas. You're gonna have such a smile on your face every time you think about the children or the people that you're supporting or the animals or whatever it is. That's what I think I would do. Like try, even if it's a little vacation around it or whatever it is, but yeah, maybe go somewhere else for a trip and then you'll really, it won't feel like philanthropy that I have to do. It's like, it's a part of our new.
I need to let that experience show me.
Mm-hmm, exactly.
You know, and lead me kind of to your point. Why did you decide to do, and again, not decide, because obviously you shared that it was something that just very connected to you. But you know, there's a lot of people that need help in our own like cities, in our own countries. Is that something you were looking into? Like what made you go to
I think
Africa?
My problem would then be, which is my city, which is my country. I've been traveling so much. Like I've moved like 19 times in my life already and I'm always in different places. Germany's gonna kill me. I don't feel like Germany is the number one place where people are doing the worst.
I mean, that's a very valid point.
I think there's a lot of other issues, yes, but my heart was more connected to other cultures. I also was raised between Athens and London, so it's not like I was raised in one town in Germany. But yes, I have a home for disabled children in Hamburg, my hometown, that I was supporting. I have another project in the center of Germany that I was supporting. There's certain personal things when they come to me. But when you start an NGO, you kind of have to set your thing on like two or three sentences and you can't really change that. Sometimes I'm like, oh my God, this earthquake in Haiti, can we, you know, and they're like, it does say girls in Africa. I can't even choose. Sometimes there's a certain thing, like the German government grant, or like there's certain things that are applied now to the organization that's supporting a certain thing. Ours is women, education, Africa right now.
Do you have any hobbies?
I like to play tennis and piano.
Wow. I like that.
That's like in a school thing. Like, what are your hobbies?
Well, that's my new thing. Now that I meet people, I'm not asking like, what do you do for
a
living?
That.
I'm like, what are your hobbies?
I love that.
Thank you.
No, I love that, because we say that when we're kids. Like, what do you want to play date with? What do you want to play with? Da 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 da. But like everyone wants to have, I'm the same, but like I'm such a hypocrite. Everyone founds their own business and wants to do their own thing, go live and have their own this and that. It's like, let's just have fun. What do you like to do for fun?
Like
and
my
actually,
soul?
I'm definitely in Berlin the next couple of months, because we have to find a proper logistics and storage and everything for the company. And that's in Germany. Winter in Berlin is tough. So I'm 1000% buying myself finally. I've said this in every country I move to, but I always want to have a piano in my home. I don't have one right now and I need one. So I want to focus this winter more on going back to my piano and also
and
showing my daughter
piano.
That. Yeah.
That's so beautiful.
I need to find the space in my little place.
That's so nice. I'm so excited. So I'm going to look for some
piano videos.
Tony on the piano.
We'll see if anyone has a piano they want to give me in Berlin. Shout out.
Facebook Marketplace, baby.
Seriously, I don't even have Facebook. I'm on eBay.
What do you...
I do have Facebook. I'm just kidding. I just don't do that website.
Look her up on Facebook, you guys. What are your... Like, what's your vision for
surviving? However, you're going to answer the
question. I'm not talking personally. You see, this is why, because I know that you're right now, you're just going through it. So you don't want to think about the future. You're just, you know, you're in the moment.
I've just never been someone who has like, now with the company, we definitely have goals, which is fun. My girls are very, my daughter's going to go to school in like, 3 years? So until then, I want to have my shit a bit more together. Mm-hmm. Where is that going to be? Because I think I heard you can't travel anymore once kids are in school, right?
Yeah, it gets harder for
especially sure. As a single mom. So then I'm going to have to be in a place where I feel very... So my Saturn return needs to be over by then, please. I need to be calm and rooted somewhere.
Universe, you heard her.
You heard her.
She needs it to be done.
By then, 3 more years.
Well, no one said you're going to be a single mother when your child is going to go to...
Let's see.
You just, life is going to happen. But why would you, why are you laughing?
I just.
Oh, she's getting ready.
Like a bird and like a, you know. Can I ask you some things?
Yeah, ask me.
I'm exhausted.
You're exhausted talking.
No, I'm just, I just, Like to throw a launch event in a city where nobody's from my team was a bit much.
You know what? This is a lesson for you. Mm-hmm. Why? Because I messaged you. I said, ask questions.
Yeah.
Ask for help.
Oh, I didn't.
What do you need? Oh. And you're like, oh, don't worry about it. Oh. My friend in Germany told me I can get this place. Yeah. Great.
Yeah, no, so, you're right. You're
but
right.
This is something we all need to learn in general to like know.
Yeah, sometimes I definitely need to slow down and be like, let me take the time and get on the phone. Mm. I'm a horrible caller. I'm like email done or text done. And when I've been like, sure, we can do that. Like, let me actually call the person and feel into it. Does this make sense? Is it a good location? Mm-hmm. What's the weather going to be like? What kind of people are going to be there though? Mm-hmm. Oh, you actually have a better idea? Like, things come from conversations, which I love people in person. Like, mm-hmm. I have no problem putting my phone away always in person. But I don't like to be on my phone. I don't know what it is. I don't call people. Like, ever. Like, literally no one. Like, nanny, yes. When she calls me, I'm like, okay, is everyone alive? Like,
I just met a girl that only calls. She will refuse to text.
I know people like that too. I don't like them.
I respect that though. Because think about it. When someone calls you, the first thing you feel is like, oh my God, what's going on? There's an emergency.
Yeah.
Like, how did we get here?
No, I know. But as a mom, you understand. No, you don't always have time to pick up the phone.
Don't call me. This is not a sign.
No, exactly. No.
I'm not going to pick up.
No, exactly. Like when someone calls me, he's like, do we have an appointment for this? Like, what's the reason for your calling? What happened? Where's it burning?
Which Tony, house is on fire? I love you. You're truly so special. Your light is so beautiful. And
thank you. Am I going through my set in return? What do you think? Yes.
Are you going to go through it?
Am I going through it? Yes.
You are going through it. And even if you're not going through that, you're going through something else. And it's okay. Because I feel like that's part of what's beautiful about being a woman, especially these days, beautiful and difficult, is that we just have the world at our feet. And with that comes just a lot of everything. Mm-hmm. And to be a single mother and, you know, have the passions and the interests that you have and do so much and give back, I think it's such a, you're building a beautiful legacy, like for your daughter, you know? And
we're ending here. We started there about your mom. It's like the same thing.
Yeah, but I want you to remember that. And I think that you surround yourself with wonderful people. Our mutual friend Amarsana, you know, she's so special.
Light.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And you attract that to yourself. So I'm really proud of you.
Thank you for having me. Go through it, be in it.
And I love that you share that you don't have your shit together.
It's literally a not even day by day, hourly process. Just like, what's next? What's next? What's mm-hmm. next? And I think it's okay sometimes to live that way.
Absolutely. It's like
right now
this,
it's the only way.
Right now it's the only way. But you'll get through it. I truly feel like I'm a
therapist.
And you are not alone.
I don't know if I'm going to need a therapist. I think we need to just call each other. And you yell at me in Hebrew. And
we'll have to break our rules. I'll have to pick up and you'll have to call.
Oh my God.
It's
going to be like a whole year of like, bitch didn't pick up. She didn't pick up either. She didn't pick up either. Okay, how about 1 month? Okay, try me.
I'm excited. What I want to tell you that I'm leaving this conversation really inspired to learn. Yeah. To learn how I can be more of service to the world. Also, I am very excited for your projects, like the flea market. Super Flea Market is going to be amazing and I'm very excited to support it.
Thank you.
And just keep on doing your thing.
Thank you, hon.
Love you.
I'm always going to come back to Not Alone. I love you too. Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you so much for watching this episode. I hope you enjoyed it. Don't miss my newest episode right here. And if you're listening to the podcast on Apple or Spotify, please go and leave a review with your biggest takeaway. I love reading your thoughts. And if you have any suggestions for guests or topics, you can leave them in the comment section. And always, always remember, you are not alone.